girl. Love the mess, I watch the swirl of smoke from candles burning. While Mary looked up yearning, I got confirmed and I confessed.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Freethought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, November 28th, 2021. I'm Larry Rhodes, or Doubter 5, and as usual, we have our co-host, Wombat, on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
He just snapped his fingers, and everyone went boof.
I guess we all have to go boof.
Boof. No, just half of us. Just half of us.
And our guests today are George Brown, the second and a half, formerly from Brooklyn. Hello, George. We have Dread Pirate Higgs from all the way from Canada. Sean Contrell, he's a new guest to the show. He's from the New England area. Can you say where you're from, Sean?
Oh, I'm actually in New York, also from Brooklyn right now.
Oh, nice.
And we have, very good, the John Richards across the pond from England. Hello, John.
Hello.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in town, well, you're just not. In Knoxville, we have a group of over 1,000 atheists, and we'll tell you more about that group after the mid-show break. Wombat, where are we going to be talking about today?
We're going to be talking about wrinkles in paradise.
Thank you, Dread.
He's always got my back, and I appreciate that. Instead of going more into the topics, we'll delve into it after our weekly invocation led by our own Dread Pirate Higgs. Oh, he's putting on his hat. Oh, it's the tricorn.
Yeah, the tricorn.
Our noodly lord, who art in a colander, al dente be thy noodles. Thy blood be rum, thy sauce be yum, with meat as it is with vegetables. Give us this day our garlic bread, and forgive us our cussing, as we forgive those who cuss against us. And lead us not into ketoism, but deliver us some carbs. For thine are the noodles, and the sauces, and the grog, whenever and ever.
Ramen. I loved watching Sean's face just go in bursts of laughter, especially when you hit ketoism. It's always a good line. Dread. Speaking of which, I wanna do a full-on review and seeing how everyone's doing, but of course we got a new face here. Sean, happy belated Thanksgiving. Would you mind telling us about yourself and what was your Thanksgiving spread? Tell us what your situation was.
Oh, my Thanksgiving spread. I'm going to start with that. It was actually fairly non-traditional. I stayed in the city and went to an English pub and had fish and chips.
Nice.
Absolutely loved it. Yeah, table next to me was speaking Gaelic, which was a fun treat.
New York is a great place, isn't it?
Yeah. So, such a melting pot. Yes.
So, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, happy to. So I was a physicist for 14 years, studied that for a long time, got my PhD in that from Johns Hopkins in particle theory. When people probe a little bit more, it's simplest to just say it was in string theory, though I have to give a shout out to Dread Pirate Higgs because I also studied composite Higgs theories
I thought you were going to go for a pun and say like I was studying particle physics, and when people probe a bit more, I just say I'm just out of energy. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's what I should have said. No, there was actually in the department, whenever anybody, there was a saying that if somebody came up to you and asked what like you were working on and you wanted to actually engage them in conversation, you said astronomy. And if you just wanted them to leave you alone, you said physics.
Right.
Yeah. But
okay.
I'm a machine learning engineer now.
Engineer. Okay.
Oh, interesting.
Very, very cool. A lot of different stuff. So elephant in the room, where are you religiously? How do you identify yourself?
I'm an atheist.
Okay.
Yeah, long time atheist.
What kind of an atheist, and what made you become an atheist? That's probably a loaded question, because I feel like when I had you born an atheist, I would say like, have you ever had exposure to religion, and what made you not
I absolutely have, actually. So growing up, my grandmother would take me to church. My parents were extremely hands off. They didn't say anything one way or another. Later in life, they explained that they actually wanted me to come to my own conclusions and make my own decisions, which I think is great. Incredibly, like, it's shout out to them for that. I think that's
how you make physicists, kids. That's how you make
right. Physicists. Exactly. Yeah. Encourage come to own conclusions. Yeah. But my grandmother would take me to church. And I saw a lot of community and a lot of stuff. And like all of my friends growing up were religious. And I was like, I don't really know what any of this is about. So they got me like a children's Bible. And I read that. And I thought like that was, you know, I was learning some stuff. But early on, I can't even remember exactly like what the stories were. But I just started thinking like, oh, this is I'm not sure I get it. And then later I started pursuing physics, and actually the exposure to all of that started making me ask certain questions. Like one of the things I did very early on, I took a course in general relativity, and like one of the core principles there is that space and time are effectively the same thing.
Correct.
And they're not this like background stage that all the actors in the universe act on. They're actually like dynamic entities within the universe. They're actually part of the universe. And so I think one of the first things that really kind of solidified the, oh no, I'm very much not like religion is very much not for me, is actually getting to the question of, okay, so how did the universe begin, and kind of realizing that, or rather, how was the universe created? I think specifically is the question, and realizing that that's actually kind of a bad question, because right. for the universe to be created, since space and time in particular is a part of the universe, that means time needed to be created. But correct. Being created means that there was a point in time before which right. something existed.
Right.
Yep.
Potentially it's a point paradox. At which. Right. Exactly. So saying the universe was created when time is both necessary for the universe to be a thing and for a notion of creation is not a meaningful question.
Right. God works in mysterious ways. Larry, what's up?
If you have a multiverse, if you have other universes, you could have local time and other time. You could have time before our universe began, which would be time in a different universe.
Oh, certainly.
Excuse me.
But then it's still just like, okay, so then what created those universes? Like,
dang. It goes back at infinitum.
It's all stacked on those turtles all the way down, Larry.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for the introduction, Sean. We're going to do a quick roundtable introduction to everybody that's here. John Richards, where are you from? How are you holding up?
I'm from the coast of the UK. About
your house
miles.
In the background.
I couldn't tell there was a castle behind you.
That's fine. That's right. Yes. Absolutely.
And he's got an 18-hole golf course there too.
That better be a disc golf course. Anyway.
And what did we do on Thanksgiving? Well, we thank gift that we're not America.
Another point.
I'm looking forward to the next 4 years. I don't know about you guys, but I think it's going to be pretty good. Let's see. George Brown, tell me how your Thanksgiving went. I hope you had a good one.
Well, I've been dealing with health issues. So, but I have a question I wanted to ask Sean. That was, where did you grow up, Sean?
I grew up in Virginia. Yeah. In kind of the peninsula area, like Newport News, Yorktown, Williamsburg.
Oh, cool. That's where my mom's located at right now.
Oh, really?
How do you like living in Brooklyn?
Oh, I absolutely love it. I actually wanted to move to New York for a decade since early on in grad school. And then I finally got my opportunity and really happy here.
It's not many people who want to go to New York to be physicists. It's always like, I'm trying to work on the stand-up routine. Like, do you have like a 7-minute stand-up set that you're just not telling people about? Like, is there any aspirations to be a movie star in your back pocket?
Oh, no, unfortunately. Okay. Yeah.
What Sean is reminding me of is when my parents used to drag me off to the Brooklyn Society for Ethical Culture on Prospect Park West. When I was 4 years old, I had to sit through humanist lectures on Sunday mornings.
That doesn't sound as bad. Humanist lectures don't sound, as for a kid, that's terrible, but they don't sound as bad as
at least you don't have to sit down, kneel, stand up. sit down.
Sing.
That's not Catholic. Yeah.
Eat a bunch of grape juice. Yes. Larry, speaking of juices and food and standing up and standing down, how was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was great. We had a good spread and a lot of people came, mostly family, of course. But it was fun. And we also did a hamburger party the next day, and we had even more people. So it was cold. But still, it was nice. And it ran on into about 8 or 9 o'clock at night. So it was cool.
Wow. Fun. Wonderful. Dread Pirate, I know in Canada they celebrate Thanksgiving earlier than us. Mm-hmm. So yes. That aside, how was, I guess, your belated Thanksgiving?
Well, you know, I tried to go online to find some Black Friday deals, but there was nothing that was appealing to me. I've got some books in the cart on my Amazon account, but I haven't bought them yet because I've got probably half a dozen I'm still working through. So. But I did get my green screen studio. I haven't completely set it up, but right now the green screen is hanging to get the wrinkles out. I'm looking forward to that new setup.
I know you said it's hanging to get the wrinkles out, but in Canada, is ironing popular? Do they have those? If not, I can ship you one. It's really great. It's like you put fabric down and you just...
Really?
Yeah, it's
they
really
got that that's so technology, so my friend.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It's not as good as what they have in England, apparently.
Well, see, that was almost a bit of a segue, into the topic, wrinkles in paradise.
Yeah,
you know? I'm getting the wrinkles. I'm getting the wrinkles out right now. Yeah.
Take me home.
But I did, because I am an avid reader, I just wanted to mention that I finished the book Religion Explained, and then I've just picked up this one.
Oh, Sartre. Okay.
Yeah. Jean-Paul Sartre, Being and Nothingness. And hey, I just wanted to say something that, because Sean had brought it up. There was one thing that I had actually marginalized here. If God causes himself, then he must stand at a distance from himself. This makes God's self into something contingent, but the contingent cannot be God. Therefore, there is no God. Get it? If everything must exist, if everything that was created or everything that exists was created and God wasn't created and God doesn't exist, it's just a logical
thing. Oh, yeah.
It's a well-known contradiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought that was wasn't so easy to wiggle out of. So in my head, I'm just like, hey, listen, you guys, come up with better evidence. Until then, I'm just going to continue not to believe. It's up to you guys to prove it. I see wrinkles in your logic. And speaking of wrinkles, we're going to be talking about the problem that I have and what everybody may have with paradise, heavenly paradise, the afterlife, new game plus, if you will. Now, guys, I've been playing video games for a lot of this holiday that I've been off. And one of the cool things I've been experiencing is that after I beat a game, I can continue it in a fashion called new game plus. And with new game plus, I get to carry on all the experience, all the tools, all the weapons, money, and stuff I've crafted in my first playthrough into my second playthrough and enjoy a super fun, super easy mode with things that I've earned. The only problem is I don't have fun when I play new game plus. Mm-hmm. Games have been designed for the challenge that comes when you play it for the first time through. And there's something incredible when you beat a boss with like low power skills and weapons compared to when you have the end game skills and weapons and you reach that first boss again. It's a power trip, but it's not enjoyable. Right. And I wonder, okay, well, what if heaven is considered sort of like a new game plus? What if heaven's sort of like the extension of my life where I can carry all my skills and experiences and you know, my likes, et cetera, into a new heavenly world where I can live for eternity in paradise? It's like, is that fun anymore? Because are there challenges? Are there things that I can discover on my own? For example, Sean's a physicist. What if you go to heaven and everything's already figured out? What are you going to do all day? It's like, we don't got particles here. It's all magic and it's all good. And we all figured out and we already know it all. You don't have to worry about it. So what am I doing? It's like, whatever you want. It's like, but I want to figure stuff out. Well, you can't do that here because everything's already figured out. It's like, well, what kind of heaven is this? I have conflicts with that. I know I'm not possibly the only one. In fact, I'll throw it up to John Richards. Do you have examples where there might be wrinkles in paradise?
Oh, certainly. Yes. Well, one big puzzle for me is the soul is supposed to be ethereal, metaphysical, abstract. I'm not quite sure how to describe it, but it seems to be immaterial. So when it floats up to heaven, is heaven also immaterial? And how does that work for hell, where fire is most definitely material?
Yeah, also requires oxygen. Seems like hell has some...
And pain receptors.
And a brain to interpret them.
You need some neurons, man.
And teeth to grind. I feel like I have more corporal form in hell, which seems already immediately more satisfying for me. Though so you did, you said the magic S word. I wonder, Larry, if you have anything to say about it.
Yeah, there's never been any evidence at all. I mean, much less proof that souls are real, much less places that they would go after death. And also, we've never had a soul to test in a laboratory to find out, do they in fact live forever? Do they in fact contain all of our memories after we die? Did they start before we were born? You know, when did they start? It's just on and on and on. And these are questions that religious people just don't ask.
No.
There's no concept of anything other than, you know, like the trilogy, the God, soul, sin, all that stuff that they just accept as a package because that's what it was given to them as a child before they started questioning. And they end up never questioning.
And is a soul a record of my activities or is it me? Because if it's just a book that says, hey, here's everything Tyrone did, or a memory card or a USB stick that's like, here's Tyrone. It's like, that's not me. Like, if that goes to heaven, that's not a representation of myself. That's just a record of my past actions. Like what is a soul? And we haven't really gotten more of a definition of that. But if it is myself, well, I like doing things with my body. I like eating. I like going out. I get adventuring and stuff like that. If I can't do that without a corporal form, I'm going to have some problems here. That's not me. I seem to be tied to this body very much so. Dredd, it sounded like you were saying something. Mm-hmm.
Well, they talk about heaven being paved with roads of gold, right? Well, what keeps you down? Is there gravity in heaven?
Hey, let's ask the particle physicists.
If there is, how do you fall down to a cloud and stop there?
Well, look, if you have two bodies of mass, there's going to be a gravitational field, I imagine.
It's got to be.
Sean, would you support that? Would there be gravity in heaven, do you think?
Oh, my God.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. I mean, since everything is just, you know, the rules are made up and the points don't matter anyway, then why not?
Yeah.
No, my trouble with anything involving an afterlife like starts long before that. And like I take issue with dualist philosophies kind of out of the gate simply because of like what we know about neural activity and its connections to thoughts. Like, is the point where we can actually like image a brain while you're thinking about like a number or a shape or an image and actually reconstruct exactly what you're thinking about, which basically means like all of that is just governed by like the behavior of electrons, which follow like very well-defined rules. And in order for you know a soul or any kind of like a dualist entity to affect that at all, that means like that it also is going to need to obey some kind of like principles of physics and like should be like very, very measurable. And also, again, if it can act completely independently and capriciously and arbitrarily, like we wouldn't be able to reconstruct these images. So like I challenge like its existence to begin with. So
be made up of atoms.
Yeah.
Right. Or at least have entropy, which seems to be a really, really necessary thing for experiences to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. How does a soul get nourished? Where does it get its energy from to exist?
This homeostasis that,
right. It eats a lot of pizza.
Spaghetti, my friend.
Why not?
The least crazy, but still like pretty out there. The explanation for like any kind of dualist approach is Roger Penrose. Like once upon a time, brilliant mathematician, brilliant physicist, largely like is like posits a lot of sort of crackpot things that the community is sort of like, well, you were once good. Now. One of his things is he actually proposes an afterlife is due to an entanglement between the human brain and like zero point fields in the universe. And then they're like, you know, let's say that there weren't tons of holes in that and that was a thing. I think the afterlife is going to take an extremely different manifestation than any sort of classical notion.
Larry.
Oh, since we got a physicist on, this is a question that I always see online and it just strikes me as strange. The uncertainty principle. No, I mean, the believers will come to me online and say, the uncertainty principle means that there's a God, there's an observer, that we have to be an observer for anything to happen on Earth. So I'd like to get a physicist to weigh in on that.
I've heard every woo-woo utilization of quantum mechanics and misunderstanding of quantum mechanics to try and justify everything. Like the latest one that I heard was something involving the dual slit experiment,
right.
And wave function collapse is having to argue that like consciousness creates reality, and in order for reality to be objective, there must be a supreme consciousness that generates it.
No,
it's such a misunderstanding fundamentally of how quantum mechanics works.
Yeah, so there are really mundane things that are discovered in science that have more popular or attractive names to people who may not necessarily have like the technical background. So like, instead of explaining, hey, electrons are really hard to see because you have to excite them and to observe them, and that makes them move, and so it's impossible to figure out where they are positionally at any one point in time, well, we can make up a cloud. That's a lot of words. All right, fine, we'll call it the uncertainty principle. I like that.
Right, exactly. And now we can hide everything in it because quantum mechanics tells us that anything can happen at any time for no reason.
Yeah, there's uncertainty. There's no for God.
So the whole
there's a scope principle of thing. Applicability, right?
Right.
Mm. God of the gaps or propaganda gaps. Marketing gaps. Exactly. Yeah, science has never been a very good marketing of itself, but it doesn't have that as an interest, right? So it's just
I was going to say, the trouble here is that any scientific mystery is very close to woo, and they love a bit of woo.
They sure do.
At first impression, to be perfectly honest with you, at first time you hear things, you're like, that's crazy, it has to be magic. But like when you get the explanation and you realize it's based on all the same mechanics of how we very thoroughly understood other mechanics in the universe, then it doesn't seem as, you know, crazy.
No, but you have to have that understanding.
You got to have that.
And most people work. Don't.
No, and it's like riding a bike. It's like you don't know how to do it until you actually learn how to ride a bike. But then once you have it, it's like very hard to forget it. But and you appreciate that over like walking so much more. But it does take some initial training. Sean, I'll throw out one last thing. We got 5 minutes before we head out. You were talking about dualism. I'm not sure if this can apply, but like the reduction of the universe to just, you know, how beautifully spread out the universe it is. When you die, you got two things to choose from, heaven, hell, or someone will make the choice for you, right? And it's like, for as complex and as beautiful as the universe is, now we're just down to a binary option, set of options, one or two. I feel like, I know that's a stretch on the term dualism, but are you compatible with the idea of, or are satisfied with the idea of just like, okay, this whole universe aside, just throw it in the rug, this is just the playgrounds, now we have the two final places. It seems like a loss for me.
Yeah, same. Yes, very, very much same. I'm generally not a fan of modeling things in terms of discrete systems. When you get to like obviously like quantum mechanics dictates that everything does actually exist in like quanta, and so like I don't know. Maybe you could argue that morality is a two-state system or something that like dictates your outcome, but I think that lacks a lot of nuance. There's no I take exception to it.
That is the exactly what I was saying. I'm saying it lacks nuance. John, I know you want to talk on this a little bit, like the idea that you can be broken down into a binary state. It's crazy for me.
I've actually got some hot news, which you guys might like in the States, but I don't think God will, because heaven does exist. And it's a gay bar in London underneath Charing Cross Railway Station.
Well, there you go. Problem solved. There's your discrete lock. Just now, though, I would imagine that America has more gay bars, or at least better gay bars. I don't know. We'll have to put that in competition then. Larry, we're at the bottom of the half hour. We've been having some fun. Why don't you take
us out? Are they called heaven in America, though?
Yeah. Well, this is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LP FM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we'll be right back after this short break.
changing their mind from the paint on a sign. Is there anyone who really recalls ever breaking rank at all for something someone yelled real loud one time? Oh, everyone believes in how they think it ought to be. Oh, everyone believes, and they're not going easily. Belief is a beautiful armor, but makes for the heaviest sword. Like punching underwater, you never can hit who you're trying for. Some need the exhibition, some have to know they're trying. Chemical weapon for the war that's raging on inside. Oh, everyone believes, from emptiness to everything. Oh, everyone believes, and no one's going quiet.
Welcome back to the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Dotter Five, and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Now let's talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002. We're in our 19th year. ASK has over 1,000 members, and we have weekly in-person meetings in Knoxville's Old City at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. Look for us out on the patio. If you'd like to join us on a Tuesday evening Zoom meeting, then email us at askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org or letschatse@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, meetup.com, or just go to knoxvilleatheist.org. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one. Start one. That's right. Wombat, where do we want to pick up?
Hey, so I think we hammered pretty well that heaven has a lot of issues with it. But, you know, it's not unique to heaven. I think most paradise is bestowed or extolled by religious sections have some more work to work on. Let's just leave it at that. I think what we want to talk about, though, is physics and get into it. I'm going to throw it up to our own Sean Cantrell, Dr. Cantrell. Hey, what's your favorite particle, subatomic or otherwise?
Oh my gosh. I can tell you my least favorite one is actually the Higgs.
The Godfather.
Overrated. Saying it's overrated or cause too much trouble.
So the technical reason why it upsets me so much is that it is the only spin zero particle. And I had this like pet project in grad school where I wanted to model everything as basically something called a gauge theory sitting on a supersymmetric space, because that naturally predicted like spin one thing, so our forces, and spin one half thing. So
it's a powerful
matter.
Model.
Yeah. And like it could, yeah, I like gut theories, and all of my favorite ones are spoiled entirely by the Higgs, which is why I was interested in the composite Higgs.
Though, listen, for the listeners of the show, that's actually a good thing. So basically, science is all about making models that explain the universe. Some of the models are only as good as how useful they are, but they're not inclusive of being one-to-one with reality. I mean, we haven't made a model like that yet. But that said, if we have models that are useful, even though they are nominally close to objective truth, we're fine with it. And so if we're missing some particles and we can still use that particle or that model to determine some really useful things in the future, we'll continue using it. But when we realize it's not useful and want to keep working for more stuff, doesn't mean all that work is done and thrown away or in the trash, or that science was like, completely wrong. It just means science was being used to make science better. And that's a fantastic thing. Mm-hmm. And so awesome work, even though you don't like the Higgs. Though you avoided the question, which was your favorite particle. Everyone's got their hand raises, and you didn't answer my question yet. What's your favorite particle, my friend?
Oh, my gosh. Probably the photon.
Photon? Captures, yeah. Whoa! Fancy.
Simplest model of a gauge theory, which is like the theory that explains forces.
Very cool. Yeah. All right, throw it up to...
Will we discover it actually has mass one day?
That would hurt.
Yeah. Then if it has mass, if a boson has mass, a force carrier has mass, that actually means that it is
the photon.
The photon. If a force carrier actually has mass, that actually means that it has to decay. So it has it can only act over a finite distance. It's kind of like the weak particles. That's why the weak force is largely considered just a nuclear force, is because the scale over which it acts is so small, because basically the distance scale that it acts goes as one over the mass. So that would pose like a lot of problematic and interesting things that actually would be like highly measurable on a cosmologic scale.
It also means lightsabers would be real and you can kick people's butts with flashlights. Larry, what's up?
Over the break, we had a little bit of a discussion about what Sean's favorite physics author was. Do you want to go into that just a little bit? I told him we needed to save it for on air, and now's the time.
Yeah, happy to. So there's two, for two very different reasons. One of them is Steven Weinberg, the Nobel laureate, who was one of the three people sharing in the prize for creating the model of the weak force back in like the 70s. He's unbelievably brilliant. I think he's probably one of the smartest physicists of all time. He wrote a trilogy treatise on quantum field theory that just like is probably the most complete work on quantum field theory that like springs to mind. And then after that, he was like, what do I want to do? And he was like, I'm going to go learn cosmology and then write a book about it. And he did. And as part of the book, there's actually like some really important stuff that he did that involves fluctuations and like primordial gravitational fields that would arise from like slight fluctuations in like the cosmic microwave background and the primordial soup of the universe. And like to this day, that specific chapter that like is just his seminal work on cosmology after he just decided to learn it is like super highly cited. So this guy was just a monster in the best of ways. And then the other one is Howard Georgi out of Harvard. And he, first of all, he is a delightful person. I've had the pleasure of meeting him. And second, just I've never read a physics text that is more clear than what he writes. Like to the point where you think you understand something at the end of it. Like probably anybody, even without like a math background, could come in and be like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense. And then when probed, like, oh, so what is the answer? You'd be like, I'm not sure I can reproduce it because it was so clear.
Oh man, for a second I thought you froze there. Anyway,
no.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that wonderful answer, Dredd. Yeah, I know you're biting at the chomp. What's up? I'm. Feel free to unmute yourself.
Yeah, sorry about that. Hey, So I just a couple of things when we were talking about models there. is that just a recognition that a lot of people mistake models with what is actually out there.
Very true.
Models are models. The universe is the universe. Models help us understand the universe. They are not true representations of what's going on. Right. The thing with Steven Weinberg, we last week spoke about, we were talking about the anthropic principle. And it occurs to me that Steven Weinberg figured prominently in that because I believe it was in 1973, he had determined, or him and a bunch of people determined, you were talking about the quantum flux energies and all that, that the figure, the numerical figure attributed to that was found essentially it to be in agreement with the anthropic principle, because we live in a universe where life exists. And if it had been a value that was originally estimated, we wouldn't be here to have the discussion about it. And that was sort of a guiding principle towards which he said, no, it should actually be around 24 or something or whatever it was. And it turned out to be quite close to that. Sorry.
John?
Yeah, can I reinforce what Dredd just said about the model? Mm. What we do is model, and the models can never be, call them maps. The maps can never become the territory. They can just get to be better representations of it. Right. And you're right. A lot of theistic people seem to think that the models actually are the existence of reality.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Right.
Actually, it's found. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to make a point that simple models can also be useful as well, because the use of a model is really the value of the model. And so even if you're on Google Maps and you are in that satellite view where you can see the tops of trees and stuff, you're like, whoa, too much information. I just want to see the roads and what's the traffic looking like ahead of me. It can simplify all that down so that you have a realist or a reasonable model that you can easily interpret. And that's more valuable, at least in that moment, than the very well detailed modeled map. And so for a lot of efforts in science, it's about making models as easily understood for people who can understand them and use them. And then if you want to have a more technical understanding, there are more complex models out there for you. So there's a whole variety and array of models based on their use. Sean, what's up?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love this discussion about models, actually. And I would love to expound upon it a little bit more and actually kind of
George is like, what are we talking about, the blondes?
right. So I get it. right. but yeah, so just to your point about the models and utility and everything, there seems to be this kind of popular idea among it's I don't want to use a pejorative like scientific illiterate because that comes off like hot, but I mean like people who don't know they don't know, I guess. That science works kind of by like coming up with one theory or one model, realizing like, oh, it's wrong, and then another one completely supplants it. That's not quite true, because the models that are what we have observed in reality are actually like very valid and correct to within some particular precision of like how reality actually works. And any new model that comes along, at least in physics, is not the previous model was like completely wrong.
Right.
It means the previous model is correct within some box, some limit. Like, so for instance, Galilean relativity, how we understand relativity to work. So like I'm driving at 60 miles an hour. Somebody ahead of me is driving at 5 miles an hour. From my reference frame, it looks like they are moving 5 miles an hour faster than I am. That's Galilean relativity. Special relativity actually introduces a whole other fudge factor that it would not actually be quite 5 miles an hour. It would just be slightly less than that from my reference frame, because relativity is crazy. But Galilean relativity, this doesn't mean like, oh, Galilean relativity, that's completely wrong. It means Galilean relativity only is a decent model, a decent approximation to how everything works at slow speeds. And in fact, if special relativity at low speeds didn't reproduce that, special relativity couldn't have been right, because we know what we observe. Similarly, quantum mechanics didn't supplant classical mechanics. We didn't suddenly go like, oh, everything's waves, blah, 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 blah. Suddenly engineers are throwing out F equals MA and substituting in like Schrodinger's equation and designing bridges using that, which to your point about utility is you can't do that. But quantum mechanics, there's actually like famously this thing called the correspondence principle, which is if it didn't agree with classical predictions in the realm where we know classical physics works, that model couldn't have been right. So it's not that in physics, it's not science doesn't work as this like, oh, what we previously knew is wrong and replaced. It's, oh, this is an approximation of a more generalized model. So it's this process of not taking a map, going back to the map analogy, and like scrapping a map as soon as we find a new like region to explore. It's adding on to the map. You're just growing the map. Right. That's all that's
it's
happening.
Improving.
It's not this. Yeah, it's improving. It's not a replacement. And the old thing is also correct within up to some percent. Anyway, sorry, I'm done.
Dredd, what's up?
Well, I was going to say that that's the same thing applies, of course, in evolution. Creationists have this idea that there may be found one day some bones that are going to throw the entire theory of evolution in the sink or in the toilet, whatever.
But of course, Precambrian.
But of course, every time they, you know, every time new bones are found, it's you know, if they have to modify
it goes
the theory, that's what they do. It's not like anything gets. It's not like Darwin is now thrown to the dust and some new thing comes in where the creationists are all right.
Right, yep. Right. It's right. John.
Magic is never the answer.
Magic is
never the answer. You should put that on a t-shirt, Larry.
Yeah, John. The expression.
I like that.
The expression, as far as evolution is concerned, is modification of the existing rather than total redesign from on a blank piece of paper. But yeah, I'd like to go on a bit further from this physical models are improvements. Because we tweak them, don't we? And we get closer each time so that relativity is better than Newton's models. But and that's true today because, you know, we've got 150 years of practicing science under our belt. But there was a time when models did get completely trashed and replaced by entirely new ones. I'm thinking of phlogiston, for example.
Yeah.
And what? And I'm sorry, I'm unfamiliar with this story.
Phlogiston.
Phlogiston.
I don't know. Yeah,
isn't phlogiston? It depends. They pronounce it differently over the puddle there.
You pronounce it differently.
I didn't mean
like aluminium.
I say aluminium when I'm referring to a periodic table, and I'll say aluminum when I'm talking about. Throw away that can. All right. Anyway. Continue, John. Sorry for the interruption.
Actually, you can make a case for aluminum and aluminium both having valid origins, but and that would derail the topic.
Anyway.
What I wanted to go on to say is that the ether was another concept which has been junked, except that it sounds awfully like space-time.
Yeah, actually, sort of in a sense, like it was originally proposed because when we discovered like, oh, hey, light's a wave, we felt like something had to be waving. It's
propagating on something. Yeah.
Right. The modern understanding is like, oh, it's the actual electromagnetic field. We need to take it maximally, literally, that is actually a thing. And that's what's waving. And in a sense, that could be the ether. But also space-time like has waves. It could, in principle, be considered like a neo-ether, I suppose.
Yeah. But the characteristics of what the ether was understood to be and what the current understanding of anything similar to it are miles apart.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, maybe even light years.
I can tell you from a scientific point of view, I love how learning about science is sort of an understanding of, or an appreciation of how we've come to abstract things and put up false barriers of separation that don't actually exist. So in our laboratory, we have an electron microscope that looks at things using electricity, and we have to focus that beam of electricity through lenses. But since electrons have mass, they can't go through a physical lens like they would for light. Instead, we have these copper wire rings that have electricity going through them and produce an electric field, or that sort of like massage the beam into place and actually make, you know, focal points. And I had someone in our lab who's brand new ask me, like, how is this a lens? I don't understand how this works. And so we sat down and we talked about the concept of like moving charges through space generate magnetic fields. and magnetic fields moving through space generate like small charge or electricity. And because of that, we've thought of magnets as being like, hey, magnets are just magnets. It's like, no, but if you move them, they become something else because they're part of a bigger system that we've never really had a chance to appreciate because we've only looked at the utility of the subject in these very, very small abstract pieces, but they're all part of the same thing. Electromagnetism is like two aspects of the same thing. Sort of similar to how Sean was saying, like space and time, two aspects of something that is a consistent thing, but we tend to abstractly think of them as separate things. Like, oh, I don't have enough space in my closet. Oh man, I'm running out of time. It's like, yeah, you're actually running out of space time in both of those. But like, we, science is sort of like the exercise of breaking down your ego and expectations of the universe and realizing that a lot of things that we put false barriers and walls have are, could be broken down, and you can see a better perspective of the universe when you can start to break down, tear down those walls. I just find that as a beautiful thing. Sean, if I missaid anything, feel free to correct me.
That's all on point.
Cool. George, I want to hear from you because you got any physics questions, my friend?
I don't. I'm just sitting here listening and learning.
Okay, cool.
I have nothing to add.
Okay. Guys, Larry, what's up?
If you had, it goes back to like the universal solvent. If you made the universal solvent, what would you put it in? You know, and it's like that with antimatter. You know? I mean, they theoretically can make antimatter now, but what would they keep it in? You know, you can't have something like a bottle that made out of matter. So they confine it with magnetic containment fields. And I think that's what you're talking about, if I'm understanding you correctly, about being able to focus the beam. Your electron magnet, don't you focus it with the magnetic fields that you're moving the electrons with, or the light, to focus on an extremely small thing? Correct me if I'm wrong. I want to learn. Hi.
I thought you were asking that question to Sean. My bad.
Well, you were the one talking about the electron microscope.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would just say in general that I came into science, particularly as I was growing up, with a very high confidence that I understood how the universe worked. And time again, as all my test reports will show me, I had a lot of things to learn. And a lot of the times I was fighting that idea of like, no, I do know what I'm talking about. I do know what I'm trying to learn about. And every single time I got hurt back and forth. So like, it wasn't until I realized, you know what, you got to just like lay back the ego and just try to pick up whatever you can. And you may not get it all in the first batch, may not get it in all second, but if we put in the work, I guarantee you we'll make progress. And it was about 4 years of progress before I got, you know, better at stuff like that. But I can say, yeah, I just like science in general. I just like the pursuit of it. And I think with what you were saying, Larry, and also feeds back to what Sean was mentioning, is that it's a system that is only getting better through these kinds of discoveries that we're making. And even when we find we've been, and a lot like what Jed was saying, even when there's like offshoots or off trails, it only further adds to the perspective of the scientific pursuit. One last thing. This is a weird one. This is a bit of an analogy, but we are broadcasting to the Raiders in Knoxville. But imagine we got 30 NBA teams. That's a basketball association in America. Each team has come up with a theory of what it will take for them to be the best team for that season, right? Some players are like, hey, some coaches are like, hey, we're only going to shoot 3-point throwers. This team's like, we're going to have a very good offensive lineup. The other one's like, we're going to focus on defense. And every night during basketball season, they come together and they fight to see which system is the best system. And a lot of ways, that's kind of like what science is. There are different people who have different models, different pursuits. And the process of science is the battle of these critical ideas running head to head with each other. And what ends up is not one team winning. It's more of like, ooh, they had some good drills. We can take some of that and move it into our regimen, our practice regimen. It'll make us a smarter team. This guy is really good. Maybe we'll recruit him on our team. And it's just the constant evolution of a better process. They might have one good team 1 year, it might be a different team next year, but basketball was EQ overall or IQ overall improves. John, I saw you raise your hand.
Yeah, well, I want to emphasize that point, because another thing which theists tend to get wrong is they say, look, scientists don't know. They're arguing over, one person says this, another person says that. And what they don't understand is there's a two-stage process. And during the hypothesizing, we do have different beliefs. We do have different ideas. It's only when we test them by an investigation of some sort that we can come out with something that gets a consensus of agreement.
Right.
And they want certainty. And,
right. And
in areas where science hasn't solved the mystery yet, they can claim that, you know, we're at odds with each other. We don't know.
Yeah, that's right. Because they have certainty, even though it's not based on anything real, they have the certainty and they expect it from science.
And we have to learn also to differentiate the idea that a scientist could say something versus what science is saying, because we could have, you know, oh, what's up, George? Go ahead.
I just have a question. Is certainty a characteristic of all religions?
Ooh. Yeah.
Desire.
I think that's almost necessary.
Could you have an uncertain?
Or are there any religions that we know of that where people can hang out with not knowing?
Well, I expect that certainty would be a property of the priest class anyway, and they try to promote it to their to the rest of the population.
Yeah.
I mean, if a religion wasn't certain about itself, it wouldn't be a religion, because no one would want to believe in it.
Right. It would fall apart pretty quickly. Yeah. There seems to be vested interest in the religions that do care about certainty to make sure that the other religions don't get as
absolutely
powerful as
they do.
Yeah. It's like, I can start my own football team, and it could be about not playing football. It's like, you're not going to get very far. I guarantee you're not going to make any trophies on that.
And it, you know, and it's interesting because that book I just finished, Religion Explained, it really, you know, that's the basis of it, is that in a search for certainty, humans rely on people they believe are specialists in certain things to explain and give them the answers that they're looking for and can't otherwise find. So sure. That is sort of seems to be from that book anyway. The foundation for religion is to explain the unexplained.
Oh,
to claim to. Yeah.
Yes, or claiming to. Yeah.
Guys, I had a wonderful chat with everybody here today. This was very, very educational, very thought provoking. Sean, at this point of the show, is there anything you'd recommend that we can check out before next week? You have favorite books, anything like that? Theories? Should we check out more photons? Your favorite particle? Anything like that?
Yeah, check out more photons. Look at as much light as possible. Oh my gosh, I'm looking at my bookshelf real quick and trying to find like something that doesn't, that's like fairly accessible. You know, it's I mentioned him earlier, Penrose. He has Roger. A book called The Road to Roger Penrose. Yeah, he has a book called Road to Reality. It's actually kind of a great semi technical, but still, but doesn't require like knowledge of group theory or anything like that. And he like starts diving into his twister theory and everything later, which I have a lot of thoughts on. So
cool,
but it's great. It's a great book.
Cool. Dredd, anything you'd recommend that we check up for the start of next week?
Yeah. Well, check out my channel, and if you like it, subscribe. Again, I live stream this on Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. You can find me at MindPirate, MindPyrate. Click and subscribe. That'd be great. And I just wanted to mention to Steve here that, or Sean, sorry, that I reading all these physics, you know, that sort of layman's physics, I am now actually deep diving into algebra and mathematics again in order to bring myself up to speed so I can read my recent purchase of the Feynman lectures. And I want to understand them. So I'm going to be picking your brain here to kind of guide me a little bit on the best route to take. So I'm not wasting my time.
There are easier paths in life to learn how to use an iron. I guarantee you. I'll just show you some YouTube videos. It's not that complicated.
There you go.
Fred, if your green screen is like mine, it's plastic. It'll stick to the iron. Don't iron it.
John Richards, anything you'd recommend we check out before?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, if anybody wants Afterlife, I own it, and you can buy it off me. It's called afterlife.cloud. It's my domain. So. Okay. So it could be purchased at a suitable price. But cool. Yes, I want to plug my Freethought Productions channel, because last night I had two shows that I'm really proud of. I had Global Atheist News, in which I announced that somewhere in Finland, two Christians are being taken to court on the case of hate speech because they preach the Bible, which is against homosexuality.
There's the other side of the slippery slope.
this could have massive repercussions.
Of course it could. Of course it
and the
could.
Other show I did was with a wonderful lady called Janice Selby, who is actually resident in somewhere called British Columbia. And yes, and she has gone on a very interesting journey, because she's traveled from none to nun. That's N-U-N to N-O-N-E.
Well,
I probably know her because, you know, in Canada we all know each other, right? So
true. By the way, Canada has 9 football teams, and when I say football, I mean Canadian American football. So yeah, just random things I know. George Brown, anything you recommend that we check out before next week, my friend?
I don't have anything to recommend this week. I've been deep into the study of psychology myself, and
very cool.
I'm buried in it. I'm buried in it right now. So
tell us what you have when you come back out.
Sure. Thank you.
So over the Thanksgiving break, I was walking dogs at the animal shelter. I would recommend that if you are interested in trying to do those kinds of volunteer work for your community, check out where Humane Society is nearby. I guarantee you might find one closer than you think, and it's a wonderful opportunity to walk some dogs. They need help, and
I'm getting a rescue kitten today, actually.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. I love it, love it, love it, love it. Larry, what's atheism?
No,
I got to define it at the start of the show.
Yeah, happen to have.
And where am I going?
Yeah, yes. And tell me about the soul thing. You said you believe in souls. What? I don't understand why you said it every single time. What's the soul?
No, my book is Atheism, What's It All About? It's available on Amazon. You can find my YouTube channel by searching for Doubter 5 or Larry Rhodes. Thank you for joining us on Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Remember, you can find this show on Apple, iTunes, Pocket Cast, Amazon, and other podcasts. Just search for Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. My own content is found at digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click the blog button for our radio show archives, atheist songs, and many articles on the subject. If you have any questions for the show, you can send them to askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org or letschatse@gmail.com. We'll answer them on future shows. If you're having trouble leaving religion beliefs behind, you can find help from recoveringfromreligion.org. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life, and we'll see you next week. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Amen.
Bye. Bye.